hello and welcome to Real Talk. I'm Susan McCabe, your host, and Real Talk is the show about anything, anything that piques my interest and hopefully yours, dear listener. We've had such topics as news in a world of alternative facts and fake news with veteran journalist Gene Carlson. We've also had author of The Chalice and the Blade, Rian Eisler, talk with us about creating a society of partnership instead of domination. We've had stories about women and body image, women and power, women and money, and we've even spoken with Michael Mead about dealing with despair in times of change. It is my pleasure to get the story for you, dear listener. So if you've got a topic you'd like me to explore, send me your suggestions to realtalk@voiceofvashon.org, and I will find the expert to answer your questions and explore the topic. I can do this because of the generosity of Windermere Vashon Real Estate here on Vashon Island. They support all our community information programming, from Real Talk to Dove Speaks to all the interviews that happen on our morning scrambles to In Tall Clover with Island Bard Tom Conway. We are waiting now for our guest today. She is Mick Coleman, an actor with 25 years' experience in acting, producing, directing, and creating. Mick draws her inspiration from the intersections of theater, circus, dance, and improvisation. She creates dynamic solo theater and fosters artistic international collaborations. She's been working nonstop as a performing and teaching artist since 1988 in Seattle, Paris, New York, and with additional artistic residencies in Germany, Hong Kong, and the Middle East. She's going to talk to us today about how to bring acting into your life. How do we even do that, perhaps subconsciously, without being aware of it? So Mick Coleman is here. And I'm so happy to have you, Mick. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It is wonderful to have you. Mick, you have been a Vashon Island institution.
I wouldn't call me that. I would hope I'm not an institution.
A bright light for sure.
Okay, well, I'll take a light more than I would take a
institution. Here on Vashon Island for quite some time. Can you give us just a little history of what you've done here on Vashon and with UMO?
Well, UMO was the reason I came out here. So I met Martha Anson at a meeting for the first Fringe Festival in the U.S. called the. I was with the League of Fringe Theaters in Seattle. We were a collective of theaters, and I touted the individual person, the individual artist inside of that. And anyway, we created the first Fringe Festival, and Martha Anson was the executive director, I guess what you would call it, the first person who created the festival. And so we were working together, and I remember dragging myself to a meeting and meeting Martha at this meeting and thinking, okay, who's she? She's speaking intelligently. and then it just was a very fast and quick friendship. I showed up at a march for the first Gulf War, and I was dressed exactly like UMO. We were just all in this similar, I found my tribe. And in that process, I started coming out and house sitting on Maury Island when they lived out there, taking care of their dog Moby while they were touring. And then I was on their board of directors, their founding board of directors. I worked with Seattle Mime Theater at the time. And so I gave that voice from an artist and a physical theater perspective to the board. And then I just, you know, they were family for me. So I substituted any time they needed a performer or a teacher or anything they needed. And then an opportunity came up for me to rent a house here. And so I jumped at it. I was like, oh, yes, I'll move to Vashon. And my whole, in Seattle, my entire windowsills were covered with rocks and stones and all these things I'd pulled from the beach. They were just covered. And it was such an obvious, you know, pull to the island.
This was your place.
Absolutely.
I think many artists have gravitated here for that reason.
Well, there's something, it's actually about, I think, the people and the place and the way that time can, we have our own time here.
Yes,
it's not the same time as island time does something for one's soul. So, and then creatively, it just brings a confluence of creative minds. And for me, I often also say that Joan Hannah is the one who actually was the lighthouse that pulled all of us movement artists.
Really?
Yes, yes. She is just one of these really incredible silent voices, I think, in the physical theater world.
Yeah, she is kind of quiet.
She has her studio. She does her things there. But she's really cultivated a lot of arts, both the dance world here and certainly the circus world. She ran circuses with kids and adults for quite a while before Umo arrived, and as Umo arrived.
Well, I can see that you've influenced Umo tremendously with the whole idea of physical acting.
Well, they're all physical. I mean, that's
true.
It's not so much my influence. I think, you know, they influence me, I influence them. It's not a, we're just of the same tribe of people that are influenced by physicality. They came out of the Lecoq tradition, and which is a very, just looking at things through storytelling through physicality. So there's a lot. There's a lot here. You know, it was interesting doing 1448, which you did with me.
And for those who don't know, 1448 is a weekend of writing, producing, directing, and acting plays. 14 plays created in 48 hours.
Yeah, and from start to finish.
Incredibly exciting and high pressure.
Considering it's 7 in 24 hours.
Yes, right.
Which is like 12 hours when it comes from the time an actor gets the script to the time you're seeing it as an audience. So
it's a really fun festival.
Yeah, so that also, you know, it was interesting pulling that together, seeing how many actual actors are actually on this island.
Yeah.
There are a lot of performers here.
A lot of performers.
Some of them are doing other things with their lives, maybe smartly so.
Which you have not done.
No.
You continue to devote your life to performing and teaching and creating.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in that 25 years or so that you have spent in this field, you've gained a lot of wisdom that you share in your acting classes.
Yeah.
And that was what intrigued me about talking with you today, though I love talking with you under any circumstances. And I wish you guys could be here because Mick has one of the most expressive faces I've ever seen.
It's perfect when for radio.
Yeah, right. Yeah, me too. When she takes the stage, you really can't watch anything else. Her face, her body, everything embodies whatever is happening in the particular performance that she is engaged in, whether it's comedy or drama, though I tend to enjoy your comedy more than anything else. So in those 25 years, what kind of wisdom have you gained about how we, all of us, in our everyday lives, use acting to get ourselves through?
Oh, you know, boy, that's such a big question. How do we do it? But, you know, something just came when you were speaking, it came to my head. I was in this improv school in New York City, and there were two of us about in the class that were teachers, that were going to be teaching. And so we were taking the class to see what the students were learning. And we were there with them. And at one point, the teacher of the class said, "Oh, don't be intimidated by Mick and Annette. They don't know what they're doing either. They're just more comfortable not knowing what they're doing."
Ah.
And it was really true. And I thought, well, that's all it is. You know, I think wisdom in life or wisdom in acting is exactly the same thing, that with age, there's just more comfort either in knowing what you don't know and being okay with that, or knowing what you know and being okay with that. So on that level, I think that we are always, it's very much the same, you know. It's not easy to get up in front of people and, you know, memorize lines or know what your intention is or how to build an arc or how to make you have the dream instead of you watching me have the dream. Mm. As a performer, it's my job to just create the container and open up your own imagination in your own space. That's what I'm doing. And that's a lot of work. And the amount of training or the amount of, if people really saw what goes on behind the scenes of how you actually have to train your body or to get that sensitivity or the sensibilities to portray somebody or the nuances of what human behavior, how that manifests. Some of that is just a natural, you know, it helps to be an extrovert, for example, you know, to get up on stage. But to be able to be somebody who can really fully develop a character or take you on a ride for a story to have an arc to it, that there's so much that goes into that that is a lot of hours of really digging in and having to fail a lot and be deep inside of yourself. You can't skate. And that's, I think that's how it relates to life.
To life, right.
Is that you really can't skate through life. There's times where you're like, I don't want to do this. I can't do this. But you do it anyway, and you do it. Or you do endure it. Or you do inspire somebody, or you touch somebody from something you do that has nothing necessarily to do with your intention. Your intention is just to be present.
It seems to me that doing what you do requires a tremendous ability to observe and internalize human behavior.
Yes.
And I remember being in one of your classes and you're saying something along the lines of, how does a person who doesn't like themselves hold their head? Or how does a person who is not in the moment or who is looking ahead of themselves move their body? Can you give us some better examples of that, of what you observe in human nature?
Yeah, I love the world kinesthetically, you know, and often if I'm with you and we're talking or we're in a group and I laugh, it generally, 90% of the time, does not have to do with what you just said to me. It's how you said it or what your body did at the time. Uh-huh. Or I just have a kinesthetic lens. I see the world kinesthetically. So I love to watch, you know, the way people walk or the way, and it comes into my zone without me sometimes even really, I'm not intentionally looking mm-hmm. at that. We all have a lens. You know, I knew somebody who was a voice teacher and her mother was a voice teacher. And so it took her a long time in life before she realized, oh, you mean you don't notice the voice in somebody every time they speak first? That's not the first thing you notice about somebody? Uh-huh. You know, so we all have those. And I think that we can start observing it. You can learn how to, oh, how do you focus in on somebody's voice? How do you focus in on how somebody moves? My sister had a brain injury, and it was really fascinating to go and work with her. Because there's little things like where she parked her car. Mm-hmm. I was able to say to her, just when you come out of the store, watch your body. Your body actually, and this is something everybody can do, right? You can start observing how your body does something. Like your body will turn automatically to the car. Your body will turn, like if I'm trying to find something and I gesture, where I can't find my keys and I make a gesture, if I look at where my hand has gestured and pointed to, my keys will be in that direction.
You mean our bodies know more than our brains do?
It's not that they know more, but they know. They have their own intelligence. We're not really, I don't see my body as being, it's not me. Right? Because I can talk about my body. Right? So I have a respect and understanding of my body's own intelligence. And I reward it much like one would do with their own pet. Treats. I give treats to my body. I often, if my body does find something, because it will, I just really have this relationship, I guess. I understand its language. And sometimes if I can get out of the way of my body will tell me something. For example, if I'm trying to find something, again, because I'm always losing things, but I'm always finding them too, I have to say.
That's a good sign.
It is a good sign. I guess I like the roller coaster of life. If I'm trying to find something, the second I let go of trying to find it, I'll pick up something and I'll go, oh, this doesn't belong there. And I'll, take my hairbrush and I'll put it back where it belongs. And right where I'm putting it, where it belongs, is the thing I was looking for.
Uh-huh.
So it's like this two-step process. And it has happened so much for me that, anytime it happens, I just give I give a little kiss. Nice job. Thank you. Thank you. So that I encourage the body to go ahead and keep speaking to me, which I think it does. And I know that sounds really strange and woo-woo, and I don't mean it to sound that way. I really mean it to sound really practical.
Yeah.
That actually, if you pay attention, your body will tell you things because your body is in the journey with you. It's not just your mind who knows where you left that thing. Your body had a memory of putting it down. So your body will be able to speak to you and tell you, this is where we said it was here.
So would that idea go back in history? In other words, does our body retain memories and understandings of what's happened to us in our lives that we may not consciously be aware of?
I would imagine it probably has our ancestors' memories and consciousness that we're not aware of. I would imagine that. I don't understand how we would have blood running through our bodies and DNA that is directly from our ancestors in us, how that is not affecting everything in our... It just seems... and I know this for a fact because when you watch children, I am really fortunate in that, this is a lot to reveal on a radio show, but I will just say it. I'm a birth mother. So I have a child that I placed for adoption.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who has seen my show would know this.
Yes.
But so now I'm telling you, if you haven't seen my show. And there's friends of mine who just don't have that information.
Shows at house number 30?
House number 30. It's inside of that. And when I met my son, who I met when he was, he wrote me when he was 13. I met him when he was 15. And he had gestures of his birth father that were so bizarre and unique and weird to see in another human being that he has never met. And so there is so much that... our gestures or our vocal patterns or things that we think we have been influenced or that are just ours are not. They're actually sometimes they're in our DNA, and there's this piece of our grandparent that is coming out that we don't even know.
We are composite creatures.
We are composite creatures. And so I think in theater, in acting, we do observe. You have to observe, but you have to be more human than human.
More human than human.
You
Say
do.
More about that.
Well, I think that, an actor's job is to mimic or to understand or to have full empathy for. And it seems these days that that's less of a trait. We're trying to remove that from humanity. Mm. It seems very methodically happening, actually. And I think it's why... I think it's why theater is considered dangerous, or why people want it to be safe, or why we have gravitated so much to the living room dramas. I think it's just that theater is live, and its job is to evoke empathy. As an actor, that's my job. I have to evoke in you empathy for the character so you have an understanding, so you're not necessarily living it, you're understanding it through parable, through story.
Is that what you mean when you say taking us on a ride? Your job as an actor is to take us on a ride?
I was specifically referring to a two-hour period on that one.
Oh, okay.
As opposed to a really full life. But sure, I think the greatest theater moves you forever, right? There are images I have of theater that has moved me that I can't get out of my being. But more, I was specifically thinking, you know, I'm not really here to give you it's your ride. I'm letting you have the experience, whatever it is. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be, you know, you're bored. That's your ride.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be in the, well, I guess I wouldn't want you to be that in a theater show.
Really?
No, I wouldn't. But, you know, it can happen because we all have different tastes. But I feel like there's a lot of things that there's a lot of things that we keep, we filter out, of course, because we can only take in so much. And we are lots of different species. You know, we have biodiversity in our plants, and we certainly have it in our human beings. We're not all alike, and we have dichotomy. Like, when I went to grad school, my mentor I went to CalArts, and really, really great school. My mentor was the Tai Chi teacher. I was like, right on.
Oh,
I've got the movement teacher. I'm so excited. She was a chain smoker. And she chain smoked. Throughout that entire, and I was sitting
the class?
No, through the first, she was teaching, no, but, you know, in this mentor meeting with all of us, and I was just sitting there thinking, oh my God, my movement teacher is a chain smoker? What's that?
She's imperfect?
And exactly, and she was an incredible teacher. She was an incredible mentor, and she taught me so much about being in the present moment, about knowing that she would show us over time how a body changes, not through force or through, I'm going to make this happen. It's just through time. And doing the form changed bodies. It opened them up. It made them, their shoulders drop. It put grace and ease into a body that was, that you could see the process. And so then I learned to really love it. I love seeing dichotomies. I love it because we are human. And that's what I mean by being more than human. As an actor's job is to not only see, in mask work, we refer to it as the counter mask.
Mm-hmm.
So your happiest person, you know, we'll take Robin Williams to me, which was such a tragedy of losing.
Loss. Big loss.
Big loss. And it was really helpful, I think, to hear that he suffered through depression and that he had this really sad, hard side to him when he was when he gave so much
and had
joy.
Such incredible insight.
Yeah. And so, you know, you look at that and you go, okay, that's human. And that's human. You know, we have, why do we have all these wars? Because we have all this love. We have this capacity to, just an incredible capacity to love. And so there's this other side of us. So as an actor, my job is to not see you as one-dimensional or to see a character or to create a story, whatever I'm doing. And what I love about being in the physical world is that if you start focusing on some physicality, about noticing things, just watch things, watch relationships. A man will kiss a woman before he ever kisses her. He's already kissed her. He has already kissed her. I watched this on the subway and I love it. I love watching that because it's like, yeah, he's already there. He's already done it. And you can see him leaning in because he's already kissed her. In his mind, he's already kissed her. And it's those kinds of physicality that if you start watching them and just start observing how we are, it makes you fall in love with humans.
Yeah, that you know? Sounds like a great practice for opening one's mind, one's heart.
Yeah.
To differences among us.
And then you're less judgmental about your own, what you are. Because it doesn't, it's also, one of the things I have to really teach now, my teaching is really, I feel I have to push against this tide of gentrification. In its forms of, oh, I want to look exactly like that person looks. Let me make sure I'm in the same colored sweats and that my hair is pulled up the same way. Or like in New York, I remember seeing there was this phase where all the young girls, these 20-somethings, would be in red lipstick and big black glasses.
Yeah.
I was like, that's the look.
Uh-huh.
But it's just the look. You're trying to tap into the look. And it's not your own unique look. And the beautiful thing about clown, or when I teach clown for adults, I'm not trying to make the world full of clowns, because we are a world full of clowns. We're all fools. So I'm just trying to get people to go, well, this is you. This is what's unique about you. You don't have to be like everybody else. Please don't be like everybody else. What if our forests were like every, you know, if we just had ferns? I love those sword ferns, but if that's all that we had, you know.
It would be horrible, boring, bright.
Right.
But yeah.
We have such diversity in our, and we insist on that in our gardens and in our natural world.
We know it's healthy.
Yeah. And so it's important for as humans for us to be that as well. And so I think in life, when you can take things of the stage, of think about theater in another, it's not just entertainment. It really isn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually the voice of the psyche. And it's important that we support theater, that we go to theater, that we don't let the distancing, you know. Because I don't have to have as much empathy for somebody. I do. If really good storytellers mm-hmm. really can bring that through the digital form. It's really powerful. And I really love it. I've been starting to study that world, too, and I'm loving it. It's
as
very physical.
Film?
Yeah.
Digital film? Yeah.
On camera. There's such great physicality on camera. And that's when it's done right, when you see people who tell you the story through their bodies. So,
do you think it's harder to get a character across on film than it is in live theater?
Yeah, you have to in the on camera work. You in film work, you have to. It's not shot in order, and so it's not you. You have to actually get out of the way more. I think that's what I'm learning. I think you have to just get out of the way more. You have to do less because it's the editor who's putting it into a story. You have to give them the pieces for the editor to where to cut, when to cut away from you, or how to tell the story. That's the editor does that.
That sounds a whole lot different.
It is. It's totally
live theater.
Different. It is totally different. Live theater, you know. I also find that I have to be much more articulate in the theater because my voice, the syllables have to carry, you know, to the back of the house.
Right.
Whereas in film, you have to be more sloppy, a little bit more sloppy, because if you're sounding like you're talking with the clip, there's something wrong with you.
It doesn't sound natural.
You know, it just doesn't sound, no. It's hard if you're a trained actor because you have to learn how to do that in a big theater. Less and less now I see, you know, I'm a little bit saddened by all the miking. I know that happened, you know, way back when they had started miking Broadway, of course, but it's still sad to me in little theaters when I go, really? You're miking them. We should still know how to project.
That adds
What's
another
that?
Piece of distance. Is
yeah,
that the idea?
There's something.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what we need, you know, but I guess there's something we're doing to put more and more distance.
You're listening to Real Talk on Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSH LP, Vashon Island, Washington. I'm Susan McCabe, your host, and I'm talking with actor, director, creator, teacher, Mick Kuhlman, and now film actor as well?
Well, I've been doing that all along, you know, just little bits when they are.
There's
but
so
now I'm in
do.
New York studying it,
yeah.
So it's a different, I'm trying to study more of that.
So are you heading back to New York soon?
Mm-hmm. Well, in about a month. I'm actually heading back to New York this weekend, so sadly. I mean, I'm really glad to be heading back for this show, but it's Strawberry Festival.
You're going to miss Strawberry Festival.
I'm missing Strawberry Festival. Gosh. I'm going back to New York to do Fresh Fruit Festival.
So
at least I'm in the same genre.
So no, tell us what you're going to be doing in New York. Tell us your life in New York. We've only got a minute.
Oh, well, this is... I'm working with Hilary Chaplin, who is a really fabulous international clown that I met at the Moisture Festival here. And then she's kind of who pulled me back to New York to go study with this clown's spy monkey out of London. And anyway, so we did a short play festival and a contest for a director and a writer who were looking for two clowns, older females that work together. And they got us right at this moment where Hillary was just back in town and right before I was leaving. And so we did this contest and we ended up winning it. And our show is one of five shows featured at this festival for LGBT festival that happens in New York.
Oh, God, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, it'll be really fun.
So tell our listeners, how we can see more of Mick Coleman from Vashon or from the world.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm bi-coastal. It's always interesting. Mm-hmm. I am, Vashon is home and always will be home. And I'm losing home very, you know, I feel it. It's very hard as an artist to maintain and stay here. So I'm trying as hard as I can.
Thank you, Mick Coleman, for joining me here on Real Talk. We've been talking about acting as part of life and how to stay alive as an actor. I'm your host for Real Talk. We're here every Tuesday at noon to talk about whatever piques my interest or yours, dear listener. Thank you for listening. You can send your suggestions to realtalk@voiceofvashon.org.